Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your weekly shot of Star Trek. I am your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien. We also have Holly Michelle, and for a brief, short time, we have a Robbie Palmer.
We only have him for minutes.
Minutes!
This is a limited time offer, folks, and I messed up my own bit. How you doing?
He's on life support, so he may not last very much longer.
So, Robbie has been on the episodes quite a few times now.
I've been on a few. Last time, the most recent one was with you when we were talking about that one Ray Weiss episode.
Who watches the Watchers?
That's the one. That was a fun time.
It was a fun time. And Robbie, why don't you tell the audience what you're doing with your YouTube channel?
Slowly but surely killing myself. That's what I'm doing.
He's mutilating one finger at a time.
Yes.
This is why he's on life support.
Basically. What you're seeing on my YouTube channel currently is the longest, most annoying form of suicide ever attempted by an online personality. So, every year I take part in the 31 Days of Horror. I watch 31 horror movies within 31 days. Not necessarily one a day, but, you know, 31 within the 31 days. And usually I throw a picture up on Instagram or Twitter or something like that. I do it with a lot of my friends. And this year, I put out a challenge to the people that have been helping to support my channel. Get me to 250 subscribers, and I will do the 31 vlogs of Halloween. At least a 2 or 3 minute video every single day talking about a different horror movie every day.
Yeah.
They got me there by, like, my birthday.
You got your subscribers.
Yeah, I did. So I put up another challenge. Get me to 275, and I'll do at least one live show every single week.
Wow.
I think we just passed 300 today.
You are doomed.
Well, the live shows are actually pretty awesome because I don't really need to edit anything. All I need is somebody, usually somebody just sit there with
a victim like me.
Yes.
We were live tonight.
David Duncan was live with me talking
tonight
about,
as in like 3 days ago by the time this comes out.
Right. But it was awesome. We were talking about Camp Death 3 in 2D.
And despite what everything in this title is telling you, it's not about concentration camps.
It is not, no.
I was very sad.
But
not because I'm anti-Semitic, but it just sounded like a bad time for people.
This is all coming
camps.
Out terrible.
Oh wow!
Well, you know, I do what I do.
It's been a lot of fun doing this. I've got a couple of shows that are coming out. We got the live streams and everything. Live screams. That's what I'm gonna call
that.
Them now. The live screams. I love it. But it's been a lot of fun. We're now officially 1 week through.
Yeah.
I'm not dead yet.
I'm not dead yet.
I don't want to go on the cart.
You're not fooling anyone.
You'll be dead stone in a minute.
Just to go dovetail with that, Netflix is streaming Almighty Python. They have Holy Grail. They have the old episodes. They have Life of Brian.
The Flying Circus?
It has a Flying Circus?
And they have The Meaning of Life. And they have a whole bunch of other stuff. So
The Life of Bran.
Life of Bran. So all excellent movies.
Yes.
Should check it out.
I have The Flying Circus on VHS.
Oh, that's great.
Wow, VHS.
You're a human being.
So, VHS.
Red Letter Media watches lots of stuff on VHS. I need to call them and see if they can go and get me a VHS player.
You want to know where my head is right now? You say VHS, and I'm like, ooh, VHS, I should watch that and review that this month.
Is there a movie VHS?
There's three movies called VHS.
Oh.
They're
UHF,
movies.
The Weird Al movie.
Yeah, I know that one.
No, they're
that's amazing. That's a good movie.
Movies.
It's got Emo Phillips in it, who's Kipley Brown's husband.
Kipley
Brown's been on our show before?
Yes.
Yeah. Emo Phillips cuts off his finger on the buzzsaw.
And then we go back to it.
This is a Star Trek podcast, if anybody didn't know. We are
usually Star Trek podcast. This part might be missing because of our technical difficulties like we had last week. Who knows?
Who the hell knows? But Star Trek Discovery Season 2 dropped.
And, yeah, second trailer for Star Trek Discovery Season 2.
Much more longer. We got more to see.
More to see. Thank the maker. We've got Klingons with hair and an actual Klingon D7.
D7,
not that
finally.
Star Destroyer ripoff that they showed in
the first trailer?
No, the original show, Choose Your Pain. Oh. It looked like a Star Destroyer. I mean, it was like a triangle in space. I was like, that's not a D7.
Triangles in space.
triangles in space.
Dave, obviously, you've been super critical on a lot about Discovery. What is your feeling of this trailer?
I'm so jazzed. I am so jazzed for this trailer.
Jazz hands going?
Jazz hands. It's,
look at those nipples.
They are shooting. They're cutting.
Don't get cut glass right now.
So.
I just came all over my equipment. We might have some more issues.
More technical difficulties.
More technical difficulties as I clean out the spooge.
He's not joking. It just missed me. I was almost collateral damage.
Collateral damage. Seeing the actual D7 show up was amazing. Seeing Klingons with hair and facial hair was amazing. Mm. There's still some ugly ones about it, but I mean, they
can't have all good-looking Klingons.
No, we can't have all good. You only have some good-looking Klingons. So
it looks like my theory might have been right. It could have just been mass alopecia.
Just ugly, ugly Klingons.
Oh, yeah, they all had to cut their hair to make batleths because of the crazy Kalis cult. But I mean, we see Spock with a beard. There's some kind of weird red angel thing, which is like. I don't know why there's a red angel and why Spock is seeing a red angel and why we never saw Spock see a red angel before. Lots of little neat, quick homages. It looked like when they're walking on the asteroids, there's some like crashed ship or something.
Yeah, some cool stuff going
like,
on there.
There's some really cool stuff happening. Like Tilly gets shot with some kind of gun thing that sucks a ghost out of her. Like,
yeah, it's say like, yeah, this is gonna hurt.
This is gonna hurt. Like, is Stamets now a Ghostbuster since he's like,
yeah.
Maybe he's sucking out Culber. Maybe that's Culber inside of her. He's Culber's like sucking out.
Yeah, maybe Culber took over her body. He has a whole ghost thing with Whoopi Goldberg making out with Demi Moore.
Yes, all the making outs. So he's gonna have a straight kiss if he kisses Tilly because Tilly's
and the internet explodes.
Oh no. But it looks like he's like sucking out. There's like some kind of spirit or some kind of alien presence inside of her. Like, yeah. I don't know what's going on with that. But with the D7 and the hairy Klingons, it's like my question for everyone here, because I've been complaining about it for so long, is
have they been listening to you?
Are they listening? Not just me. Lots of fans complained about it. Are they listening to the fans, or is this the plan all along?
They're listening to the fans. No way, they're not listening to the fans. There's been such a backlash on the way they changed the look, you know.
Yeah.
I think they're listening.
I'm going to be very honest with you. You guys saw my sinful analysis on Star Trek Discovery.
Yes,
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I would have come to the conclusions and ended up falling in love with that first season if it wasn't for listening to you guys pointing out all the continuity errors and different problems and stuff like that. Specifically, the episode that you had the boys from Trek Yards on.
Oh, yeah.
The wrap-up episode. Right, that was great. Right. That was a great episode.
I believe I was even texting you, Aaron, when I was listening to that episode, and I'm like, oh, my God, I know exactly how I want to approach this, because I disagree with everything that those guys are saying right now. And you're just like, oh, okay. No! Let me tell you! You're making no sense, but okay. But yeah, definitely. I totally think they're listening to the fans on this.
I think so.
You know?
I think they're... And honestly, they should in a way. I mean, sure, you don't want to give fan everything they want, but you want to give them enough to go like, oh, I'm so happy that this is the world I know.
Right. Look at the Klingons alone. Like, I do think that one of the more clever things that they did during that show, there's a lot of the errors there, is literally starting a Klingon war between the fans. I think that was a very clever thing that they did with Discovery Season 1.
Hmm.
However, if you want to fit into the continuity of Star Trek, have I been saying Star Wars this whole time?
No, you said Star Trek. You were saying Star Wars earlier your stream.
But that was a bit.
Yes.
If you want to stick with the Star Trek continuity, you have to give them their hair back. You have to give them the facial hair. And seeing as though they didn't in Season 1, you have to now. Otherwise, it is not in the prime timeline, which they've been saying right from the word get-go that it is.
Right.
If you don't do certain things, you are not in that prime timeline. You're retconning everything.
Hmm.
So you have to listen to the fans. You have to backtrack in certain ways. Otherwise, it just is not the same thing.
Yeah.
No matter what you say, you've changed too much.
Did you like the trailer?
I love the trailer. Yeah. I think it looks fantastic.
What about you, Holly?
I liked it too. Yeah, it looked very exciting, very intriguing, lots of different things going on, which is, you know, always fun. So, yeah.
I had Spock with the beard. Like, even when he did the culinary training, I don't think he had a beard.
Nope. One time he ever had facial hair was in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, so is he Mirror Universe Spock?
Maybe.
And
oh yeah, Michelle Yeoh's in it.
She's great.
And they've got these like hologram technology for Section 31 people now, I guess.
I want to throw out a crazy theory. I already have a crazy theory.
Oh, here it comes. Hit us up, O'Brien.
Let's do it.
Seven signals, red angels, the seven archangels of God.
Ooh.
I mean, that's where I went.
That's interesting.
So. But how do
well,
you?
The thing is, I don't know how to respond to that. I kind of love it.
The thing is, they are supposed to be going very religious with Michael this season.
Oh.
Like since the first season was the Klingon War,
right?
They're supposed to be attacking spirituality this season, and the angels and the seven. That's
God. That would be fascinating.
And her name is Michael, so she's like,
right.
Know. Oh my God. Literally,
and last season
we wasn't on the tripod. I tell you to drop the mic.
We had Gabriel Lorca.
Yeah.
And then...
Oh, maybe this is like a prelude to...
Yeah, so Michael, Gabriel, and then maybe we can actually get our Lorca back, since Mir Lorca died.
Interesting.
So we could get another Gabriel, so like maybe there's an angel tied to these different characters that we know, and we'll get some new...
Bizarre.
Yeah.
So we gotta get a Raphael, we gotta get a Yuri.
At least we didn't get a sneezing Saurian in this one.
Yes. That's true.
I'm glad they didn't go with the silly bit like they did last time.
Yeah, it looked cool. I loved it. I just that's my thought. I could be totally off. I kind of hope they don't do that because I kind of think they're going to rub people the wrong way some way or
so. How much? Okay, so just a random question. Since there's so much happening in the trailer, how many episodes do you think this is going to go up to? Because I think the original trailer for season one. I mean, it goes up to The Sanest Man Go Mad. So I think they showed clips from pretty much episode 1 through 5.
Yeah.
So do you think we're like looking at a similar 1 through 5 thing, or do you think it's more further out? Because I was thinking,
it was 9, wasn't it? Wasn't that episode 9?
No,
Sanest Man Go Mad. Wasn't that right around the halfway point?
Magic makes sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh wait, no, that's up episode 7 or 8. Seven, I think.
Well, whatever it is.
It's definitely past 5.
It's the halfway point.
5 is choose your pain.
I think we're going to see. I think we're probably only like 4 episodes in or 5 maybe at most.
Because I wasn't expecting to see Spock until like toward the end.
So obviously, and if they're already at that mid-season break.
They said there's not going to be a mid-season break this time.
I'm doing air.
Oh, there isn't.
Oh, no, they said they're not going to do a mid-season break this time, according to a tweet I saw.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
So, thank goodness, because it's only 13 episodes instead of 15.
Do you remember the facility where they kept the mentally deranged people in Dagger of the Mind in the old TOS, where they kept all the crazy people?
Like Marta?
No, that was a different one. That was that's the one where they put Kirk in the chair to make him crazy.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I was thinking they maybe sent Spock. He's like, I'm seeing angels. He's like, all right, send him off to the Federation Funny Farm. You know? So I don't know. I think maybe he's been institutionalized.
Maybe.
But I'm seeing angels. Of course you are, sweetie.
Don't we all see angels?
I don't know if Spock would admit to it, because that doesn't seem very logical to see angels.
I don't know. I think Spock would admit to it.
I think he would.
Yeah. He's truthful. Mm-hmm. Especially back then, and he's very truthful.
I don't know. He learns how to lie in TOS. We didn't look at your tapes for the captain's final orders.
Yeah, but that's TOS. This is pre-TOS.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I don't know. I liked it. It seems very exciting.
Agreed. And then so Short Treks. Apparently only me and Holly have seen Short Treks, so maybe we should wait and talk
next time. Let's talk about it. But I'm sure Robbie's got to run.
Yeah, I do have. I have not seen Short Treks, so I've got nothing to contribute here, but I do have to get going.
All right, cool. Thank you for stopping by very briefly to talk about this season 2 trailer.
Absolutely.
That's exciting.
Holly, beam him out of here. Shoot him out the airlock.
Hey!
I mean, beam him out.
What? One is so passive and happy, and I kind of want to do, and the other one sounds horrible. It's a terrible way to die.
Well, in Star Trek in the Darkness, they got blown into an airlock.
There you go.
All right, touche. All right, I've got to go. Duncan, always a pleasure.
All right.
O'Brien, you must suffer.
I will suffer.
The Duncan clan motto is learn to suffer.
Holly, always a pleasure, love.
Yes, bye. Right.
Live long and prosper, guys.
Thanks for joining us. Beaming out! So, Short Treks, The Runaway came out, and it's basically Tilly by herself. They show a nice flyby of the ship. I thought it was a recycled flyby, but it looks like they changed it a little bit, or at least it's a slightly different CG shot. There's a empty, there's a container, some stowaway comes on, she's bleeding, and she can turn invisible.
She makes her arm on the crate that she comes out of.
Oh, that's what happened. I thought she was already bleeding.
No, that makes she like, the thing popped open, she put her hand out, and she ran it up the side, which actually didn't really make a lot of sense, because it later on you see that it's her arm, but she was, it was like her hand ran up it and caught a piece of damaged metal.
Yeah, so yeah. She kind of runs throughout the ship, and Tilly's getting some breakfast at, like, or some food at shift change, and the computer talks with her about that's not a, how her coffee choice is bad for her, because she wants, like, a triple shot of espresso or something like that. Like, this is exceeding caffeine recommendations. It's like, give me my damn caffeine, computer!
It was actually really funny. Like, she literally had a conversation with the replicator. It was like, that is not a suggested amount of, and she's like, it's my best friend!
Eat it now! Sounds like Kaylee.
It was really, yeah.
That's funny.
It sounds like Kaylee a lot, though.
It's very funny.
It's pretty good. So, she comes in, and, like, it's, the alien, the intruder comes in, and it makes all the replicators go crazy, and it throws food around, and Tilly teaches the girl what ice cream is, and what a universal translator is, and she's, like, very animalistic. Like, she crawls around all fours and is all weird. And then, like, she cloaks whenever all the people come in. And Tilly's like, there was some kind of bunny. And it got loose. And this is why the whole mess all's a mess.
Bunny.
Yeah, it was weird.
It
and
was
then
strange. A strange excuse.
It was weird. It's a very Tilly thing to do. And then they go to her quarters. And they're just kind of talking about stuff. And she looks up on the computer that finds out that she's, like, a runaway. And, like, she's like, I can't be reported. I need to go back home because she's figured out a way to fix dilithium, crack dilithium crystals, which Scotty says they can't even do in the 23rd century.
Wow.
Like, so it's like, oh, that's a interesting Star Trek IV callback. So she says she's the only one who knows how to repair broken dilithium.
This and, runaway?
Yeah, this runaway girl.
Yeah.
So, like, she starts off animalistic and turns out she's, like, super smart and, like, and a queen. And then Tilly just beams her off the ship, and then before she beams her off, she gets a piece of dilithium. I mean, it's a cute. It's just weird that she starts off as, like, an animal, and then all of a sudden, oh, she's, like, a queen, and she's, like, the super smart, inventive person who does stuff that Scotty can barely figure out how to do.
Well, I mean, it's go ahead.
She remains animalistic throughout the whole thing. I think that the only thing that really changes is that you begin to understand her. Because of the translator,
but she also she also stands up and talks, stands up and walks around like a normal person.
Is she an alien?
Yeah. She's got funny fingers and stuff on her hands, but, like, she's all crawling around like an animal. Like in the first couple times you see her, then later she's just walking around. But then later, the rest of the episode, she's, like, walking around normal, like a regular person. It's like, okay,
well, it could happen.
I think it was more she was crouched in, like, defense and caution rather than that's just how they walk around, because she is humanoid, you know, so it's not like she wasn't shaped funny aside from her fingers and her face. Actually, I loved the prosthetics. I thought she looked really great.
Oh yeah, the makeup was amazing. Like, and, like, her hands were kind of crazy looking too.
Yeah,
she had, like, extra long fingers, but and they had, like, these, like, points on them, but it was cool, and she looked amazing. The makeup was good, the actor was really good.
Yep.
And she's like, oh, I'm just, like, I'm a princess, and I didn't tell you at first because
didn't want you to treat me differently because you knew I was royalty.
I'm going to teach you differently because you're acting like an animal, but, you know.
Right, I guess.
You destroyed the mess hall.
And, you know, she's like talking about, oh, I made a universal translator when I was two. And, like, oh, I made ice cream when I was two. And you don't know anything because you just learned what ice cream was 5 seconds ago.
It was a cute little relationship between the two of them, but it was, like, the whole point of the episode was about, like, they mirrored each other in some way, like, you know, the princess was running away from the responsibility of becoming queen. Her coronation was, like, tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Tilly is running away from command school. Well, she's not really running away, but
her mom wants her to
losing
run away
faith
from
in her
school.
And in herself, and she's not coping well with it. So it's like,
yeah, because
they each had to learn something from each other, which was nice.
Yeah, it's a nice little like B plot thing, but mm-hmm. apparently it takes place sometime during season two. Because she's already talking about command school, and she doesn't have, like, the big metal square around her badge. It's a regular badge.
Okay.
Like, that she got at the end. So I'm not sure, like, when this takes place. I mean, like, I assume it's taking place somewhere during season two or after season two ends because of... We don't know who's the captain or anything of that.
Well, it's
at
a quick jump between season one and two anyways, because basically Enterprise shows up, and so it's got to be...
Yeah, so it's pretty much... It's got to...
The only thing is, right between at the last episode, obviously some time had passed between everything that happened.
I mean, maybe.
Well, because obviously they had the Michael came and addressed like the Academy or something, yeah. Or at Starfleet, or
I feel like that happened really fast. Although we don't have no idea what the time frame is.
That's what I mean. It could have been weeks between, like in that during that one episode.
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, it would make more sense because of the Michelle Yeoh thing, because she's part of Section 31, and that deleted scene that came out later, showing her like getting recruited. I guess it's canon since she's obviously Section 31 in this. So, I mean, I guess it could take place before season two, but I mean, it definitely takes place after season one proper,
right?
Because she's got her different shield, different logo.
Sure, sure. Well, sounds like it's a fun little short.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice little thing, and we'll get your thoughts on it next time.
Yeah. I'm not sure anybody's going to be dying to hear what I think.
I want to know what you think.
Well, should we get into the rest of the episode?
Yes. This week we're talking about iBorg. It's kind of like an iPhone.
iBorg you.
To death.
All right, iBorg is season 5, episode 23. This is first aired May 11th, 1992. We start off this episode. Enterprise is exploring an uncharted system that they might try to colonize. And while they are flying around, they notice that there is a signal coming from one of their moons. When they go to check it out, Riker, Worf, and Dr. Crusher, there's a crashed starship. And guess who's on it? The Borg.
The Borg!
And they're all dead except one laying under a piece of sheet metal. So this one Borg that's still alive but unconscious and injured, Beverly Crusher pleads the captain.
Please let me fix it. I need to make it better.
I need to practice medicine.
I need to practice coding. I gotta fix this Borg's code.
So... Obviously, Picard does not want them to even be on the planet. He just wants them to beam up and just fly the hell out of there and get out. Worf says we just kill it.
Of course, Worf would be the one to be like, let's murder it.
Kill. Just kill. But apparently they were like, well, no matter what, if we fix it, they'll know we're here. And if we just leave, they might know we're here as well. So we should just try to fix it as best as possible and then be on our way. So... That's where the Crusher gets the Borg beamed up to a
holding cell.
Yeah, to a detention center.
Yeah.
And that's where she begins to treat him. And there we have Picard feeling... We have this odd exchange between Troy and Picard. So if you aren't familiar with TNG for any reason, I don't know why you wouldn't be, but... a season ago, we had The Best of Both Worlds, where Picard was assimilated into the Borg, and so he has issues with the Borg. And obviously, they took him, they cut him to pieces, and they basically...
Made him wrestle in mud with his brother.
Well, he made himself do that.
Well, if they didn't assimilate him, he would have never have had to.
That's right.
He resents that.
So anyways, Troy's like, are you all right? He's like, sometimes people who have been assaulted, you know, still have residual feelings and emotional distress over that. And he was like, oh, I'll let you know if I feel bad at all. And then he dismissed it. So obviously they weren't going to do anything for Picard with his, other than his just extreme prejudice. So
yeah. Oh,
and then the like Troy kind of follows him into his quarters and is like,
"Well, that's what I
is there some issues?
Is this a problem?
Is this a problem? Do you need your head spanked?"
Anyways, so Crusher gets the Borg.
Are you offering?
Feeling better. She says there's parts of him that his implants are damaged because of the crash, and LaForge thinks he can fix up those little parts that need to be fixed. And then Picard basically asks, can we just give this thing a virus to change its the Borg root commands and just to kind of
destroy the whole collective?
Destroy the whole collective.
Wipe them out. Such a great plan.
And you know, LaForge is like, I guess I could figure out something, and Crusher's like, you are going to send this person as like a ticking time bomb back to the Borg?
Yes
I am,
and gladly.
So they have a whole meeting about this, of course, and
always go to the briefing room.
I have to go to the bathroom. Let's
have a meeting about it first.
They should have a briefing room in the bathroom.
Yes. All the tables are toilets. I mean, all the chairs are toilets.
That would be gross if all the tables were toilets.
Yes. And then there's only one toilet. They all have to share.
So Crusher seems to be the only one that seems that this is, like, wrong. It's like, we're committing genocide. And they're like,
Archer did it. It's fine.
And, like, there's no, it's like, they don't have any, like, official war declaration against us. And he's like, no, but, I mean,
they'll mess us up anytime they can.
They're trying to destroy us. So it's obvious that the Borg are
aggressive. It's the logical thing to assume.
So, LaForge sets up, LaForge basically, everyone's getting kind of geared up to do this, give this thing some kind of virus to put into this Borg, and then send it back.
It's going to take time.
Yeah. LaForge sets up a power conduit for the Borg. So it can eat some energy, but the Borg seems basically confused. And alone.
Because he can't communicate with the collective.
Yeah, he doesn't get the song of the Borg in his head.
It's like the humpback whale song.
Anyways, in the meantime, Picard and Guinan have a little fencing lessons, fencing fight.
Yeah, they have to put up a fence so Mr. Wilson can talk to them.
Yes. Ooh. So,
home improvement in space.
It's a 90s joke. Anyways,
it's probably airing at the same time too.
Actually 92. Sure was. So Guinan kind of basically goes, hey, I hear we got a visitor, and do you think it's smart to keep this Borg on the ship? And Picard's like, well,
I hope so.
I hope we're making the right decision here. And then she says, you know, he was injured. I thought we should have, you know, Crusher thought we should help it. And then while they're doing their little fencing fight, she pretends that
her leg is hurt.
Her leg got hurt. And then she goes in for the win and gets him right in the chest with the fencing foil. And she goes, see what happens.
When you feel sorry for someone who's an asshole.
Basically.
Or when you feel sorry for a ghost who can't feel anything anymore.
What? Are we talking about ghosts again?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
It's amazing many times you guys talk about ghosts.
I don't like it's you know what?
Incredible. This is the unofficial ghost podcast.
I mean, honestly, Holly, outside of us talking about Star Trek, I don't think I've talked about ghosts in like... I can't even remember last
time. Decades.
Anyways.
Here's the only time we ever talk about ghosts on the Star Trek right. podcast.
Pretty much. We're sorry, everyone.
As it should be.
We're sorry, everyone.
We are sorry.
So sorry. Hey.
So, hey. So the Forge and Crusher are going to give the Borg some more tests, and so they bring it into a science lab. So I guess what LaForge has been doing is every time the Borg acts bad, he gives them less energy, and then when he's acting very cooperative, he gives them more energy. So kind of to train them. Like,
little reward system just going on.
Skinner box it.
There you go. And They bring him over to the science lab instead of the detention center, the brig, and they start going through, you know, saying we want to run some tests on you. And that's where they come up with a name for the Borg.
Hugh.
Right. And all the while, I think it's really neat, like, that this whole time, like, Geordi was watching over Hugh and continued to discuss things with him, even though he knew full well what he was doing and that he was basically turning this guy into a, you know, well, I guess not really a martyr, but a bomb. And a
virus bomb.
Yeah. And, like, he still tried to have the human conversations with this Borg. And it was really interesting the way they wrote it.
It is. There's a lot to dig in right there.
Yeah, I think they should have named him Sophia Lopez.
Why?
Why?
Because the same actor plays
Nip Tuck.
The same actor played Sophia Lopez on Nip Tuck.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched that show so much back in the day.
Is he transgender, transvestite, or
he was trying to get a female reassignment surgery in the show.
Okay, right.
The actor's name is
Oh yeah, the actor's name. I have his name. I'm sorry, I didn't think we're going to jump into that already.
I just thought it was cool. We talked about his name being Hugh. So it's Jonathan Del Arco.
Yeah, Jonathan Del Arco.
Who was in this episode and also played Sophia Lopez in Nip Tuck.
He's also in Blossom.
Oh, and he was also in Star Trek Bridge Commander as Lieutenant Commander Miguel Pedro Diaz. So,
and he was also in Voyager.
Oh yeah, and he's also in Sopranos as Father Jose. Jose, probably Jose. I'm sorry, not Jose.
Jose.
I feel like they should have named him And He.
Sophia Lopez.
She
was Sophia Lopez in Nip Tuck.
Right.
Let's use her correct pronouns. Or they were Sophia Lopez in Nip Tuck.
They were. We are.
They were. I think we are. They is a term for trans people.
Yeah,
sometimes.
The Borg use we.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Oh we. Yeah, it's
we,
true.
We.
OUI.
Actually, we. There was a discussion in one of my nerd girl groups that talked about people and their preferred pronouns, and there was a person on there who wanted to be called we.
We.
And I was yeah.
That's awesome. I would. I'm totally down for the we pronoun. We are Borg.
Except if you're in France, you're just saying yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oui, oui.
Oui, oui. And yeah, in kindergarten, you're talking about your penis, so.
or urine.
Or that, yes. All right, so we have, they're running tests, and then they're doing some spatial acuity tests. And then LaForge asks to take Hugh's prosthetic eye, and he just kind of just hands him over his eye without even questioning it.
Yeah, take a look. Have fun. Don't jizz on it.
It's the funny thing is we get these great little intimate interactions between Geordi, Hugh, and Crusher, and how he's like, you know, I don't hear the voices of the Borg, you know, so I'm lonely. You know, so Beverly Crusher feels bad for him, his loneliness, and
he needs friends.
I need friends, and then he says, after we're done with the test, he says, we'll return you to the collective, not knowing you will be a living, walking time bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You can go home.
You can go home, Hugh.
We'll wreck your home. We're home wreckers.
Strap a bomb to your back.
Suicide bomber. I'm letting know.
Yeah, I know. So LaForge is 10 forward talking to Guinan, and he's like, you know, I kind of thought I'd kind of hate this guy, and he's actually pretty way cool.
He's cute. I like it when I scratch behind his ear because he only has one.
So, but Guinan's not having it. He's like, oh, so you gave it a name, and now he's...
Oh, yeah, she's livid.
She's like, now you're just fine with it? You know, he decimated my whole planet. Right?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You asshole.
You. Sophia Lopez, you asshole. So, Geordi gets all indignant on her. He's like, well, fine. Well, if you don't want to talk to it, maybe you should listen. Isn't that what you're good at?
Mm-hmm. So, then Guinan goes to see Hugh in his cell. And she just basically says, isn't resistant is not futile.
I think Hugh falls in love with Geordi because Hugh does not want anything bad to happen to Geordi, even though Geordi's trying to put a bomb on him.
I think I tried to put a bomb. You put the bomb on me. What was that song? You dropped the bomb on me.
You're asking me what a song
is?
Sorry,
I was trying to remember the words.
Holly, do you know what the song is?
It's an old, that's an 80s song.
I just don't think there's enough to go on with just that.
Yes, anyways.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who can't get the reference, thank God.
Well... Anyways. So Guinan, you know, or Hugh tells Guinan that he's lonely. He says, oh, you're lonely like me because we killed everybody on your planet.
Right.
And then she's sort of just like taken aback, like, oh, wait a second. There's something
she
different.
She understands the concept of loneliness.
Yeah. What? It's like this is not your average Borg. So right. She starts all of a sudden some emotion starts stirring in her.
Mm-hmm.
So the Borg, they're talking about Geordi's like scanning the Borg, and he's like, why are you doing this? It's because I want to learn about your species. And he goes, we just assimilate species.
Well, then we know everything.
He's like, yeah, but don't you understand that we don't want to be assimilated? I would rather die than lose my individuality. And mm-hmm. It's like a foreign thought to Hugh. Like, he's like, what?
What are you talking about?
I love it. It's the greatest thing. It's free food, all the free breadsticks you could possibly want. It's like the Olive Garden times a million.
Except the breadsticks are just standing in a charging station. You can charge your batteries whenever you want.
And the tables next door won't stop screaming.
all those baby Borg in the drawers down the line are like screaming.
Baby Borg.
Where's my breadstick?
Where's my breadsticks, Mama?
give me my honey butter.
So Forge and Data present this invasive program, which is the topological anomaly, and it's basically kind of a puzzle, and it's not a straight-ahead virus. So basically, once the Borg gets it on their computers, they're going to process and process and process this until it becomes something that's completely unsolvable and taking up all
a
their
paradox.
Yeah, it's a paradox that they can't figure out, and then they'll shut down.
It'll be like something like Pi, and it's like, oh, we figured out Pi a long time ago.
It would be funny to be like, oh yeah, we got that.
Yeah, we got that one. That's not an issue anymore.
Actually, it seemed like a really cool idea. I don't really understand how that exactly works, but I think it's a cool idea.
Well, you mentioned that they actually used like the ocular imagery from Hugh's eyepiece,
right?
To it, like make like it's like a hidden in like a subfolder or something, and when it's opened, they get trapped in it because it's never ending.
Right, and they just keep on trying to process and process and process until they just destroys their...
Right.
Keep computing Pi forever and ever and ever.
It's pretty cool.
Right. And then LaForge talks to Picard alone and says, look...
Can I interrupt you for a sec, though?
Yeah.
Because right before he goes and talks to Picard is the discussion with Hugh about having friends.
Oh, right.
For loneliness.
Yes. That's why we have friends, right?
Yeah. And he's like, how do you deal with the loneliness? And he's like, well, that's what friends are for. And Hugh is like,
are you my friend, Geordi?
Geordi is my friend. And
he's like, oh, shit.
Captain, we gotta talk.
I just strapped a bomb onto my friend. I can't do this, Captain.
Yeah, basically.
So he brings up to Picard, and Picard says, you know, 20th century scientists grew attached to their laboratory animals. And he goes, unattach yourself.
Right.
And it just
that's how it's done.
Like, quit being a pansy and
kill
go
it
see this guy before you commit genocide, and then you'll regret it because you'll want to know. You'll wonder.
Well, that evening, Guinan visits Picard in his quarters. And Picard's going to sit down with a little bit of scotch, read a book.
Check out Guinan in her underwear.
Yeah. And Guinan goes, you know, I stopped by and talked to Hugh. He's like, who the hell is Hugh? He's like, that's that Borg you got locked up down there. He's a pretty nice kid. You should go check him out. And Picard's like,
Nope.
I ain't doing it. And he says, well, before you go and destroy a whole race, maybe you should take the second to talk to him.
I still
to
can't.
To talk to the person that you're sending in. And he freaks out. He's like, a person!
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's the whole time I feel for Picard, but then I'm almost like, yeah, but you kind of need to take a step back, you know? But,
right.
So Picard then beams Hugh to his ready room, and they do a quick little interview as
Locutus
and Hugh. And he basically uses the word I. He says, I don't want to assimilate.
I don't want to assimilate Jordy because Jordy's my friend.
Right.
And because like, what?
You said I, you know, so.
And that was all it took.
Yeah.
Like, it's so flimsy. Like I like this episode, but like, they're trying so hard not to make our heroes look like assholes that they're just like, they've lost their minds completely.
How do you mean?
Well, like, the idea is to kill the Borg. I mean, because the Borg are an unstoppable force.
Sure.
And the only way you can fix them is by taking them away from each other, and then you can kind of maybe rehabilitate them one at a time. That's going to be impossible. There's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Guinan had her whole race wiped out.
Sure.
And she's like, oh, I've changed my mind about him. After just meeting one who's been separated from the collective.
Right.
Like, when they have to think on their own, yeah, they might be, you know, they seem friendly. Like, when you, like, you know, you're given a, you know, given a drug... drug addict money. It's like, oh yeah, they're gonna be nice to you, you know. So they can go buy some more drugs.
Well, I have some thoughts on all of that when we get done with the wrap up here. But
go ahead. I just feel like they're trying to make everyone too nice, like be so forgiving to the Borg. Oh, like, your heroes be so are so forgiving.
It's okay.
When common sense is like, no matter how nice this one guy is, their entire race is gonna try and fucking kill you all. So I mean, like for everyone to just do complete 180s is kind of like. It's almost silly, but it's like they're trying to make our hero so likable. Well, it's almost comically bad.
That really?
So likable. I don't know.
You feel that way. That's interesting.
I don't know.
Okay, so after Hugh uses the word I, Picard calls a staff meeting. Basically, he's got this revelation that, it's not a bad kid after all, this young bored Hugh kid. He's got a lot of... nice qualities that we don't want to send him in like that. So the thought is we won't give him this virus onto him, but the idea that he has the idea of individuality or singularity would impact the entire collective. And
it could spread
and it could change the way the Borg thinks forever.
We're going to give them a different kind of virus.
Yeah.
We're going to give them feels.
The conscience.
Give them the feels. the Borg ship is on its way, and they basically give Hugh the choice. They said, you can either stay with us, we'll grant you asylum, or we'll go back to the crash site. The Borg will pick you up, and from there you will go get put back in the collective. And he's like, well, I want to stay with my friend Geordi, but then... he's like, but if I stay with Geordi, then they'll come after looking for me. And then, you know, you guys will be destroyed and be, you know.
I can't have Geordi get hurt.
Geordi can't be hurt. Bring me back to the crash site. So
maybe if I turn on my Sophia Lopez, I can show him a good time before I leave.
Whoop, whoop. So he decides not to take asylum and join back the collective. And there we have the... Geordi decides to go down with them because, as we know, the Borg often just ignores individual threats.
Yes.
They don't really care.
They only like the collective threat.
The collective
threat. See what I did there?
Yeah, yeah. Don't we know it? the Enterprise hides in like the chronosphere of the star there in the solar system, and that hides them from the Borg sensors, and while they're hiding there, Geordi's down there with Hugh. He says his goodbyes, and the Borg come and
take their dead,
and they take Hugh. But that last minute, Hugh turns around,
looks
says,
at Geordi.
I love you, Geordi.
I love you, man.
He doesn't say it. But
you're not getting my Bud Light.
I liked that before he went down, though. He looked at Picard and was like, I will try not to forget that I am Hugh.
Yeah, yeah. Because that was the one fear, is that won't it be erased? Immediately, and then he's like, yeah, but maybe it's part of his individuality and singularity will be, you know, broadcast.
I mean, observed for just a moment.
And this episode does have repercussions later in that two-parter with Lore.
Yes, yes, exactly. So there we go. We got the this is the Iborg ends right there with him getting beamed up. Dave, obviously you have... thoughts about this?
Yeah, I just seems so. I think the thing is, like, I remember I thought Admiral Nechayev was in this episode for some reason. I remember she chews Picard
out about it later.
In a different episode.
Yeah. And Drumhead too, I think. Isn't it? Or Drumhead season 4, I think.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I just thought Admiral. I kept waiting for Admiral Nechayev to come up in this episode because I remember him getting chewed out by her over this incident.
Yeah,
and I forgot it was later, so I kept expecting to see her show up. I was like, "When's she going to show up?" But
yeah,
guess it's later. So I was
he does get yelled at for this, and they come up with the same plan basically.
Yeah, later on. Yeah,
later on. Yeah
so I thought that was interesting that I was looking for her and she wasn't in this episode. But yeah, I just feel like they're trying to make our heroes too nice. Like I was saying earlier, it's just like, I don't know. It just logically, they're so wrong. I mean, because their first thought is right. Like, let's wipe out the Borg. Let's get it done. You know, they're a threat. Nothing's going to stop them. Our technology doesn't hold up a thing to them. Mm-hmm. Q's not going to be able to save us every single time from the Borg, or he may not even feel inclined to save us every time from the Borg. So I mean, like we need help, and if this is the best way to do it, put a computer virus in them, let's do it. That's like the logical thing to do. That makes complete sense. And then everyone makes a 180 in this episode, except for Beverly. She always wanted to be nice to the thing, but it's just like,
yeah,
I don't know. It just logically it makes no sense for them to just do these 180. Like, sure, it's one nice guy, but I mean, like, it doesn't mean anything. As soon as he gets reintegrated to the collective, they'll probably take over again. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like it just like I mean I know that Star Trek's always does this ethical dilemma and stuff like that, and is it ethical to commit genocide? And like, is it really a race? I mean, they're
maybe slave. Not technically,
it's like they're slave to the they used to be biological races, other races, but they're slave to their computer programming.
Sure,
like there's no like. There's no redeeming factor to the Borg, like as far as
they're efficient.
No, but
they're efficient.
They might be. I don't know. I just don't think there's any kind of redeeming factor for the for them, like benefit to the universe.
So you're saying execute them without prejudice.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Yes. Let's execute the Borg without prejudice. They are bad, and they can't. Unless you're Janeway, you can't reason with them. Somehow Janeway is plot device. It's Voyager, but normally you can't reason with the Borg. So I mean,
and this was before the movie, so we didn't have a Borg queen.
No.
So this is the Borg was still a collective. So it was just there's like a faceless mass of invading. You know,
just the unstoppable force that all has
machine
one.
Men, yeah.
They just has one common goal.
Cybermen.
Yeah.
Right. Holly, what did you think?
Well, I always like episodes about the Borg. I mean, it's fascinating to me. And kind of going off of what David said, you know, if it wasn't a person, I say a person, if it wasn't a humanoid being that they had to deal with, if they, you know, were able to plant something on the ship that infiltrated their systems, then they wouldn't have thought twice about it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too, Holly. I was thinking about what if he was just a dick, and it was like, oh, fuck that guy. But since he was like a nice kid, they were like, oh, he's kind of a nice kid. Let's not do it.
Right. But I mean, it's kind of like there are two things that you can really look at right here. One is condemning a group of people for the actions of all or the actions of one. So like, just because Hugh had some redeeming qualities, that doesn't mean that the Borg is redeemable. But at the same time, you know, obviously when the Borg are not a part of the collective, they have potential. So, you know, with, you know, people in society who are racist, you know, you can't get pissed off at every white American because they're a white American. You know, you can't say nasty things about Mexicans because not every person who is of Mexican descent is the same.
Sure.
So like the Borg, I find the Borg like very, very interesting for like social circumstances.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But also, you know, as a collective, it's interesting to look at as well because, you know, when you don't have a group of people chatting in your ear, you have the ability to think for yourself. Yes. And we see it all the time in today's day and age because you're on Facebook and you're getting all these people are feeding you the same like news articles and all everybody's got all the same thoughts and feelings. And most of the time we don't question it. They're just like, oh yeah, that makes sense. No, fuck that guy. Like, no, did you read the article? Like,
yeah, or that's just go along with the headlines or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't really get into the meat of what's going on. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, we kind of have a Borg society where people are really just accepting the information that's fed to them by their peers and not really thinking for themselves.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree in a lot of ways.
The book assimilates other races. That's fake news. We don't assimilate the entire race.
Well, you know, and I going along with you saying, I mean, this plays in a lot of things. Like you, like how you were saying before when we were talking about the recap, you were talking about like I think before we got to the point, but you were talking about like the idea that singularity or individuality would change would be the virus itself,
right?
And this is a very interesting because there's a theme that. People with the ideas that people have can germinate into other cultures. And mm-hmm. so because of those ideas, they germinate into other cultures, then they'll take hold. I mean, that's where you get
like
ideas.
A butterfly effect type thing.
Yeah. But it's like, you know, that's where like ideas of like, you know, even from, you know, capitalism to communism to any of mm-hmm. These were ideas at first. And then when people heard them, like, oh, that's, you know, that's a good idea. Or I like that idea. And then, it just goes, and it yep. like morphs and
escalates
as a virus. So an idea can act as a virus for good or ill. And we do see it later on in TNG where Hugh basically has a faction of Borg that are
defecting Borg.
Yeah, not.
Yeah, well, actually, I think Hugh died and like Lore is their new leader.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean.
But it's because of Lore. It's because of Hugh's thing. It did mess up the Borg.
Mm.
At least some of them, the ones he was in close proximity to.
Yeah, so it brought them out of that Borg mindset or whatever you want to call it, collective. The other thing is, I was thinking like how we treat. Holly, you're kind of talking about it in some ways, but I mean, it's like how we treat the enemy. We make the enemy, if we're at war, we treat them as like a whole mass of people that are
right.
just obviously our enemy. And mm-hmm. the one of the interesting things I thought about during this was during World War One on the Christmas of 1914, where you know the British and the Germans came across their trenches to celebrate Christmas together.
Yes,
where they were like. At first, they were just singing carols in their trenches, and then they started like singing them together. Mm-hmm. And then they actually came out and they started exchanging gifts from that, you know, they got from their wives or their parents, mm-hmm. and they would exchange back and forth what they had. So here you have the enemy stops becoming a gigantic mass of evil, and you see the individual, and you're like, oh. He's not so bad. She's not so bad, you know.
Right.
And it's just orders. I mean, like, you know.
And isn't every Borg just taking orders?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, it's all they are. You took Hugh away from within like 2 or 3 days, and he's this kid.
A free thinker.
Is it orders, or it's a collective consciousness?
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily orders. They're not just
doing. Well, it would be orders if it's a collective consciousness. Then they all have the same motives. They all have the same drive, the same end game. So yeah, it would be orders. I mean, it wouldn't be like they weren't feeling forced because they would feel like it was their actual decision and thought, but really it's not.
Yeah, and I have this theory, and that I don't have any way to prove it or disprove it, but I think when we are put into groups, we become a little stupider. I think if you say I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, I'm, you know, this or that ism or whatever, I believe this or that. I think you
groupthink.
Groupthink, you limited your ideas to only one system of thought, And then all of a sudden, any other opposing thought must be rejected because I identify as this first instead of let's tackle each argument by itself. That means you have to be more critically minded and think through every argument or be willing to say, you know what, I thought this before, but I was wrong. And I got to go back on what I said before, which is, you know, in today's day and age, you can never say, hey, I thought
you can't say I was wrong.
I was wrong. I thought this, but I guess what? I had this wrong. I didn't have this all figured out. So my point only being is that not that you can't have leanings towards one thing or other. I mean, that's fine. But I think when you just wholeheartedly accept one system of thought or one plan, you will always fail as a being competent in your belief system or your ideologies or whatever. You can't possibly fit everything into it. So there's all sorts of things, because I don't think there's a perfect system out there.
And I know it's not the same as where you're going. It kind of is, but I have a really good example. It's kind of stupid, but it's a good example that I'm exposed to every day. Mm-hmm. And it's not politics. Mm-hmm. Your fucking Harry Potter house. It's so frustrating when they put themselves in these groups, you know. We're Hufflepuff, so all we talk about are snacks. We're Slytherin, so we watch horror films, and we're black. Like, it's so frustrating that I'm surrounded by people that literally do that. Like, all they talk about is cake.
That's funny.
And candy. And it's like, oh, anything food related. Oh, you know you're a puff when your husband brings you home, you know, a cheesecake. And it's like, shut the fuck up. Like, you can be a Death Eater and be a Hufflepuff. Like, stop being so stupid. And they do. You know, you put yourself in a group and you do. You just kind of stop accepting new information. And you just kind of like mold into what you think you're supposed to be. And it's kind of like, you know.
Isn't the same thing with Star Trek? You know.
Well, what are the groups in Star Trek?
Oh God!
Oh, all the different Facebook groups. They got the JJ haters. You got the Discovery haters. You got the JJ and Discovery haters.
Yeah.
You got the Voyager haters. You got the
I mean, there's like you can hate almost anything in Star Trek. You know, there's like they'll just pick and choose. And look, I understand there's some Trek I'm not crazy about either. You know, but I don't like flatly denounce it.
Yeah.
You know?
What boggles my mind is that, like, people who are fans of Star Trek, you know, it's all from the perspective of the Federation, and the Federation isn't about hating.
I know.
Well, that's, you know? That's why my argument so many times, and then, like, these people are like, no, Gene Roddenberry's rolling over his grave. I'm like, no, your guys are making him roll over his grave. Like, these people are... Some people, these nasty people that kick me out of Facebook groups and report me because I posted a Discovery podcast.
I'm
the worst person in the world. Oh, my God.
I know.
Right.
So with that said, I mean, like, with what you're saying, Holly, what I'm saying is, like, there's you can have your core beliefs, and sometimes it's okay to reassess them once in a while and look back and say, new information I've received, like you, and maybe I've changed my stance on things. Maybe I don't want to assimilate Geordi. Maybe I want Geordi to be an individual and enjoy his life, you know?
I want him to be my friend.
With that said, too, I was thinking about there's a great documentary, and if you have not seen it, you should take, you know, the whatever 40-some minutes to watch. It's on Netflix. It's called The Accidental Courtesy. It's Daryl Davis and Race in America. And it's a this Daryl Davis is a like a middle-aged black blues player, plays amazing piano, and he talks people out of hate groups. And
that's cool.
And he actually goes to Klan rallies.
That's awesome.
A black man. And he makes friends, befriends them. And he goes, you know, like, what? How can you hate me if you don't even know who I am?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fascinating. And exactly like I think you were talking a little bit, too, about it, Holly, was how people, especially on Facebook, will, like, you know, throw out certain things and they'll attack certain people. But then I ever notice that people don't agree with you, like you, Dave. You get kicked off of groups because inadvertently you say something or do something to piss them off. and they're like, I'll get the fuck out of here, or they unfriend mm-hmm. you. I've been unfriended for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
So Daryl Davis in this thing is basically saying, you know, you have to talk to people to not have a war. You have to talk to them. No matter mm-hmm. if you disagree with them, you know, totally. Like, Daryl's like, I don't agree with the Ku Klux Klan. Obviously, they don't want me around. So, like, I go and talk to them, and I show them a human face, and they get to enjoy who I am, who I am as a person, and they reassess their whole way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great. You should take the time to watch
it. That sounds fascinating.
It's a great, great, great Netflix. I don't think it's just Netflix, but you can see it on Netflix. Mm-hmm. But the idea that we need to have open dialogue, face to face dialogue. And that's what he does. He goes and talks to these people and goes to their house, goes to their, you know, goes to restaurants with them and has a face-to-face with people. And I think when we have more face-to-face, all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's another person.
You're forced to consider the other side.
Yes. And but then all of a sudden all those hard line thoughts and views maybe start melting away when they see a person on the other side like, what? No, I don't, you know, this guy seems nice, or this person, this woman seems nice, or whatever. Like, why would I actually dislike them?
Yeah.
Right. You know? You know, whatever. It just thought, I think this is a good exercise, especially in today's day and age, like you were saying, Holly, before, is that this is like we you know, we get in our trenches, and we won't come out for Christmas.
won't come out for Christmas.
And,
right.
And it's just like, I get it. Like, we all get angry about certain things. It's perfectly understandable. But I think we should also think about the other side. And that's where I get a point where you're like, just decimate the Borg. And I'm like, yeah, they are a threat. I'm not going to deny that. But maybe if you could deprogram enough Borgs, the Borg wouldn't be that powerful.
And like, if they can access the collective's whole like core thought process and alter it, why wouldn't they alter it for the better rather than
it'd sheer be funny. Destruction. Like, they're all suddenly just are friendly,
like Stepford Wives shit.
How may we assist you?
How may we triage?
Yeah,
they'll go to the planet that Dr. Phlox abandoned, and they'll fix them. They'll fix the disease instead of assimilating them. That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at a point, it seems like the Borg would have to flip that switch. I mean, if they can't, you know, it seems like, you know, they can't consume everything forever, can they?
Maybe they just like end up like, you know, fixing it, all the things in the universe. They go around, they're like the little builders of the universe.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Like, just reprogram them to be helpful instead of a detriment. Like,
just build
like
Dyson
terraform. Yeah, build Dyson spheres to have them terraform planets and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, just make the Borg your own weapon. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
There's so many great things you could do with the Borg.
I guess the thing is, with this episode, what I enjoyed is that the entrenched anger and resentment, and obviously well-warranted, Guinan's planet was destroyed, Picard was assimilated, and everyone had their prejudices against the Borg, and all of a sudden it melted away when they actually saw the individual.
And that's the thing, like, Guinan especially, like, her world was devastated. Like, she's like, her life has been ruined completely by the Borg. I mean, yeah, Picard lost his individuality for like a week. Or like a couple
days. Get over
days.
It, man.
No, but like her entire culture and way of life, her planet is gone. Like, that just seems so unrealistic just to get over it. Oh, I met one Borg and he was kind of nice.
I don't know. I just
feel like they're trying so hard to make the heroes likable.
I disagree in some ways too, because you see like Vietnam veterans go back to Vietnam and they reconnect with certain people that were fought against. Maybe they didn't like know exactly that soldier that they fought against, but it's very cathartic for them. They're like, you know, they're like, you're just, you know, you were just doing your thing and I was just doing my thing. You know, I like, we weren't, you know, we were just following orders, you know, kind of bullshit.
Yeah. But the thing is,
and
I mean,
both
like,
sides were so.
Yeah, of course. It's war. You know, that's the bad thing about any war, is that you're trying to preserve your way of life, whatever that may be. Borg world, Federation world. And you don't like, you just want to continue what you have here.
But the reason I make an argument against this is just that the Borg are
less a people and more a force.
I agree.
There's not, you can't reason with them unless they're individualized, and then when they're individualized, they're not really Borg anymore.
I agree.
I believe me, I know because I've
dealt with this in different manners as well, because you deal with people who are in cults. They do not at all see anything point you give them until you start breaking down on a human level. Then all of a sudden, they start seeing things slowly. Just like that movie I was telling you, you know, with that Daryl Davis, that he would connect them on a human level, made them feel empathy at some point, and then all of a sudden, those ideas melt away.
Yeah, it's just kind of hard to make like a real life analog to like, well, regular war in the Borg,
because Borg's a little different
because they're not like a culture. They're just
I don't know. I mean, like sometimes I was thinking a little bit to myself about, like, you know, we have War on Terror, and we have these extreme radical Muslims that are obviously willing to blow themselves up and, you know, do horrific things. And I've known, you know, Arabs and Muslims that are wonderful, nice people. The kindest people ever, you know, and like it, but you know, there are Muslims that are out there that would, you know, behead somebody or blow them up, but that doesn't mean every Muslim out there wants to do that, you know.
And I think I don't remember exactly, and I could be wrong, but isn't like ISIS, they're not truly like spiritual, they're not led by like the Quran.
Well, they want to start their own caliphate.
Fucking fucks.
Of course they are. They want to start their own caliphate. That means they want to start their own like holy movement of their own, like own government run on theocracy. You know, it's anything with religion, you can take it and bend it as far as you want it, and that's the problem. And it's like you can argue against that's not what we really believe in, but you know, obviously you can bend religion to a lot of things. But my point only being is that, you know, after 9/11, you know, like there was a lot of anti, you know, Muslim sentiment out there. And obviously, you know, a lot of people were angry, but you do would have to realize that there are some, I knew a Pakistani guy who, you know, obviously he's Pakistani, you know, they have a democracy. They live in a relative secular country, and he was here, you know, going to school. And right after 9/11, some guys came on the bar and kicked the shit out of him. He had like a big scar across his face because they beat him up. You know, I mean, this stuff happens like that. You know, because like, oh, he's a Muslim asshole. You know, and they attack. So it's like, yeah, there are some, you know, jihadists that are freaking maniacs, you know, that need to be stopped. But there's also your average
lots
Joe.
Of regular people,
just like,
yeah.
You know, just trying, I was gonna say, you know, trying yeah, to live their there, lives.
There are plenty of people who are not Muslims, you know, whether they're, you know, Caucasians from America or, you know, a black person who lives in Europe. Like, there are a lot of people defecting to ISIS, and they're from all over the place. Like, it's not just Muslims.
Reasons
you can't
why
just
people
hate
that,
all Muslims.
Yeah, like, why people do things for certain reasons. Who knows? Like, they just want to start. They have reasons why they're disenfranchised with their society enough to leave a European country or even America. Actually, yeah. I don't know how many Americans have gone. I think there's been a few, but not too many, defect to a place like to ISIS or any of the other out there, and they would do it. But
it's insanity.
It's crazy, but people do crazy shit. People do crazy shit. So I mean, it's like,
So don't let all the crazies become a collective.
And that's the thing is it's not only the crazies become a collective, and unfortunately, I guess the flip side of it is that, you know, where the ISIS and the you know, whatever else that's out there, the Talibans and whatever else, the baddies out there that are trying to really harm people. They're not as big as the Borg. Like, what would we do if we had ISIS Borg size? Maybe we would be totally different way we thought about it. But, you know, I mean, I don't know how many there would be, but quite a lot. But, you know, we have to kind of temper the way we think and feel, even though sometimes we might have prejudice against them. And I think this episode's perfect for that. It's just like Picard had prejudices, Guinan had prejudices, and when they met him, like, oh, I don't really hate you. You're
right.
you're not that bad, you know. So whatever.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I totally get what all of you're saying, and it totally makes sense. But like
you're just thinking strategically, like let's get
devil's, yeah, like strategically slash devil's advocate. It's that they're not perfect analogs, but they're trying to be, and that's what Star Trek's always done. So I mean, like. You guys are definitely right. I've just been kind of like devil's advocating and
I understand it, and I get the idea behind it. I mean, yes, technically, just feeding them some kind of virus, and then, I mean, would the Borg all die, or would they just kind of
break apart from the collective? I mean, like, you know, if you liberate them, I mean, that's even better.
Yeah, maybe they become like more docile and want to
help instead of just
work
kill.
With people. Yeah.
Well, you know. That's a good thought, but even so, if you know, I can't remember. I'm pretty sure I've seen an episode or two where, you know, they start to go insane.
The Borg do?
Yeah, when they're separated.
Oh, because they don't have the voices
right.
for the
they would
Borg.
if they weren't you know all linked, they would just start a cult.
Yeah, they start the cult.
And they did. The cult of lore.
Yeah, they did. Is that not Unification? I can't remember.
I can't remember the name of it.
It's a two-parter.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good one. We should talk about that one soon. But yeah, I don't know. So it's obviously what they gave Hugh did affect them in some manner, but we'll never know exactly because it seems even into Voyager time, the Borg is still just as strong,
not as strong, considering Voyager can take like 16 Borg cubes by itself.
Well, but still,
which is ridiculous.
But still, I mean, we still see the Borgs out there. And,
oh yeah,
and they're both and they're
Delta
doing,
Quadrant's their home.
They're doing their thing.
Yes, but the Kazon are too bad to be assimilated by the Borg, which is fantastic.
They're like, you guys are idiots.
We're not. You will detract from perfection.
I hate the Kazon. So much.
Me too. Even the Borg hate them, which is perfect.
Anything else we want to say about this episode?
I think I'm good.
I think I'm good with this too.
What about you, Holly?
I mean, I think we kind of talked the crap out of that episode.
We talked the crap out of that episode.
That Borg ain't pooping for weeks. All right.
I think that was it. I mean, it was weird. So I had seen this episode a couple of times. So driving back today, I listened to it in the car, and it's so odd just to hear how cruel Picard was, and like it was just very strange, you know.
Absolutely.
But that was the only other thing I think I even thought while I was listening to it was just that it was odd that, you know, they're the Federation and the first thing was like, Worf, kill him and leave. And yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's the Borg. I get that. But it was just like,
I think the one thing we noticed that the Federation and Starfleet definitely still come with their prejudices and their angers and hatreds. And just because you are a fine candidate for officer doesn't mean you have
what it takes to be a good person.
Or if you've exercised the demons inside of you, you know, so.
Right.
Well, whatever.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah, but it's a good episode. Very solid.
Oh, this is one of the better ones.
Yeah, for sure.
I love this episode.
Really good episode. Good job, Sophie Lopez.
Yes.
I mean, Hugh.
What is it, Jonathan DiArco? Del Arco?
Del Arco, yeah.
Del Arco. Fine.
He's very good. Very, very good. And lots of diverse things.
Yes.
Well, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. Our intro is provided by your friend of the show, Dave Wilkes. You can find us online on Facebook at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. On Twitter, we are at Synthaholic Duo. I personally am at David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Black2004. And Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
And please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us, give us 5 stars, and say something nice about us. Also, if you could go to our Patreon/Synthaholics, throw some money our way. Helps us keep the podcast going and helps us fund our equipments and every other little doodads that we need once in a while. Right, Dave?
Yes! I bought new cables and hopefully they're making this episode sound better than last week's.
Yes. And also, as always, as ever, tell a friend. Tell your mother.
Tell a lover.
Tell your lover. Tell your brother.
I want to dance with somebody.
I want to feel the heat with somebody. Tell them about Synthaholics. Tell them about the podcast if you can. Tell your coworkers. If you know that they like Star Trek or sci-fi or just looking for a new podcast to listen to them, please give them...
Or lewd jokes.
Or lewd jokes.
Lewd jokes. David's lewd jokes.
So definitely let them know.
Shop at Joe's.
What?
For my lewd jokes.
Shop at Joe's. He's got a whole book of them.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Good seeing you, Aaron and Holly and Robbie, who's no longer here. It was great getting four of us. Man, it's been a while since we've had four people on the show.
Four people on the show.
It's good times.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, live long and prosper, one and all. Thanks for listening.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Hooray!
Yay.
It's a day. Oh, I forgot to talk about this last time. But episode 200.
How far are we from that? We're still a little bit away, aren't we?
Yeah.
We have like 10 episodes left to like 10 weeks or something.
Oh, we got so much time, 10 weeks.
That's right near Christmas.
So the Alex Jones thing, I was thinking if we had it set up where like we need to like write down era specific things. I think it'd be funny if we jumped back and forth between eras.
Yes, okay, but we need to start a Google Doc.
Aaron, please speak.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello, my baby. Hello, my daddy. Hello, my right
guy. Hello, my right guy. Hello, my right guy.